Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name is John, and this week we'll be talking about stablecoin. AT&T starts using blockchain services. Bots are getting out there into the crypto exchanges, and the valuation of Stripe has jumped up. Please hit subscribe to keep up with all the latest in FinTech news. But I should do a party where I have a taste test. And you can, which is which. And you think you know. And
I actually
let's see if
like,
you actually get it.
I just like shaved ice. Like old
oh,
school
simple.
Italian shaved ice.
Yeah.
Flavoring on top. It's the best.
Snow cone. With me today is Monica.
Hey, John.
And Steve.
Hi, everyone.
All right. Well, let's get started with stablecoin. There's been a lot of articles and a lot of efforts around this lately because it solves one of the biggest problems with Bitcoin and Ethereum, Ethers, and other cryptocurrencies, and that is?
Volatility.
Volatility. Yeah, good guess from the name, stablecoin, right?
Stablecoin, yeah.
So it's one word, stablecoin, not
so
stablecoin.
What is stablecoin?
So stablecoin is, so it's a cryptocurrency, but its value is tied to something else.
And to be clear, it's a class of cryptocurrency. Stablecoin itself is not a particular cryptocurrency.
Oh, right. Yes. That's a good point. Yeah. Tether is the largest stablecoin, and it's got by far the most usage and value, but there's been some problems with that.
And Tether is pegged to the U.S. dollar.
Tether is
pegged
to the U.S.
dollar.
Exactly. Yeah, these clever names they have.
That's a good one. I approve of Tether as a name.
But it can be tied to other things besides fiat currency, of course. There's
gold.
There are other ones. The crypto pound is another currency that's tied to. But yes, gold is another popular idea to provide some stability to this crazy volatility until recently that we've been having in especially Bitcoin. The advantage to this is that you can actually use stablecoin to do things like make loans, or there's ideas for insurance that automatically gets activated through a smart contract. Mm-hmm. And then if the contract is tied to 4 bitcoins, you don't know what you're going to get. But if it's going to pay out 100,000 stablecoins, you know you can convert that into your local currency, into dollars.
So when I read about stablecoin, it seems to me like this might actually be a place where cryptocurrency could really make its way into the average person's life a little more rapidly than some of the more volatile and unusual crypto coins.
Right, exactly. So instead of that infamous story about the bitcoins worth millions now that initially paid for a pizza, mm-hmm. You can freely use the stablecoin without being afraid of that happening. And a lot of cryptocurrency exchanges are actually cut off from the financial system. So you saw a lot last year when the hype was happening that a lot of credit cards and banks wouldn't allow you anymore to transfer your money to a cryptocurrency exchange. So a stablecoin, if you can buy and sell back and forth into a stablecoin, that helps alleviate that problem, and it gives those financial institutions and the regulators and the consumer advocates less to be concerned with. It addresses their problem with it. Now, Tether, like I said, it's had its problems, and they've been audited, and it's a little murky as to whether there is an actual dollar for each stable coin.
Right, because that's actually one of the things that's critical here is that if you are tethering your stablecoin to a fiat currency or something that has some inherent value like gold, the theory and the practice should be that for every Tether coin that exists, there's a dollar sitting in a bank account that's tied to it.
Exactly.
It's like the old gold standard, right? Where the coin is backed by the asset that it represents.
So how do you judge monetary policy for, say, dollars or pounds or whatever, yen, with the DLT crypto thing?
Well,
if you expand the money supply,
right? So
what effect does that have on
right now, these are small enough that they wouldn't have an effect on that, I would assume. but what that looks like once you start entering into a future world where, you know, there's some, let's call it a tether dollar that represents something like half of the money supply, and a significant portion of all the contracts that are being enacted in the world are smart contracts that are getting completed through that routing process and kind of automatically executed. I don't know.
Yeah, well, if each dollar is kind of set aside in escrow or however they secure it, and they do have to secure it, a lot of the new stable coins are touting that they're audited and that they have a lot of very good control procedures in order to avoid the controversy that Tether's had. And there are a lot of these offerings. So if those dollars are kind of put off the table economically, right, they're not being transacted, it's just replacing that fiat dollar with a stablecoin dollar. So I guess in theory, it should net out.
Got it.
But with a lot more transaction activity.
So say I'm Joe Blow. What is the advantage of me using Hi. What is the advantage of me using a stablecoin over, say, just dollars or any other fiat currency? Is it just the ledger? Is it sort of the trust and transparency? What's driving me to use a stablecoin and not see cryptos as another gambling tool or like a speculative tool for me to use? And
yeah, well, all of those things are true, have been true for Bitcoin. You know, there's the bad uses and the good uses for everything. But stablecoin, right, addresses the big problem. And that's why there's been such a huge demand for and so much creation of new stablecoins is the volatility. Mm-hmm. You can't really build smart contracts for a loan, or you can't do it for insurance if you don't know what you're going to get at all. So many people are jumping in. There's a study that came out that said there's 57 identified efforts to create new stable coins.
Wow.
And the reason for that, and a lot of that is venture capital funds, investments into companies, the Winklevoss twins and their Gemini effort are all doing this so that they can have the platform for these kind of transactions that are now possible with a stable coin.
And in terms of the use case for a Joe Blow, I'm not sure that a Joe Blow has a real immediate need to use this. But you could certainly think of businesses that might want to do some kind of transactions or trade with another company that might not share the same legal jurisdiction. And then the possibility of a smart contract that automatically executes where you wouldn't necessarily have to take someone to court if they didn't pay you for whatever mm-hmm. services you rendered or
right.
something like that, where a smart contract that uses stablecoin as a proxy for the currency that you do your transaction in anyway, that could be useful.
Yeah, it simplifies, it eliminates a lot of the intermediary steps. It just simplifies things and makes them more, hopefully more transparent.
So if I can force you here to make a forecast, would you say that in the future, it's a lot of the interest in blockchain will now be based on stable coins and not so much the cryptocurrencies? Or sort of that mini class of crypto? It seems like a nice middle way between the Wild West of Doge coin and all this other stuff, and now there's more pegged to an actual currency, coins.
Yeah, it's still early days, so it's hard to tell. And it shows how new that cryptocurrencies and blockchain really is, that new ideas are still developing, like kind of like the early days of the internet. You didn't have things like JavaScript and security, and all these things had to be built on top of that basic structure in order for it to be useful and trustworthy. And stablecoin does seem like one of the pieces that could address some issues.
Mm-hmm. It does seem, though, like one of the hurdles to creating a stablecoin is needing to accumulate a fairly massive base of that asset,
right?
So if you are going to have a stablecoin backed tethered to the euro, you got to get your hands on a lot of euro to make a meaningful coin.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be kind of a hindrance. I don't think that changes the practicality of the service or the product, but it does seem like you've got to have some deep pockets or have access to some.
Well, there are people with deep pockets working on it. So the Gemini effort that the Winklevosses are working on.
I just got that reference. They're twins.
Yeah.
Gemini. Duh. I just got it. Okay.
definitely leave that in. So yeah, the Gemini, they're working on something called the GUSD, stablecoin tied to the dollar. And it's a lot of these new stablecoins are built on the Ethereum network, which is designed to be a platform. And it's using our favorite token standard, ERC-20.
Nice.
A lot of these are
is
using
that my favorite?
ERC. Do you have another one that you prefer?
No.
Oh, then this is your favorite.
I think ERC-19 was way cooler.
So this token standard is being used for a lot of things, and among these, and tokenizing is really what stablecoin is doing to a fiat currency, but it can be tokenizing anything. Real estate, investments, corporations, shares, stocks. So this is one application of that standard and tokenization, which will help a lot of the disintermediation that blockchain and cryptocurrencies aspire to. And so let's see what happens. Tether is still the big player. These are very new efforts. So we'll have to see what happens and how much gets built on top of these new efforts. But yeah, very interesting. And as always, I like to see these new applications and new capabilities coming out of this thing.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right. So next up is one of the uses of blockchain actually getting out there into AT&T.
Another big player jumping in.
Yeah, so AT&T, our favorite multimedia conglomerate. So they recently purchased.
Who says it's our favorite?
Well, I'm using scare quotes here. Our favorite.
Oh, you can't see the quotes. The very
sarcastic
quotes.
Very sarcastic. Yeah, I'm wildly gesticulating here.
Yeah.
But, so our favorite media conglomerate, which recently purchased, of course, HBO among other properties, is now getting into the blockchain game. So AT&T has been working with IBM and their blockchain efforts to offer enterprises solutions to also run IoT-based. So I think this is interesting from a blockchain perspective, but also from a business side, because it means that AT&T is now looking to diversify its revenue sources and is now looking to offer beyond just internet telephony services and now sort of offering a platform where their enterprise customers can also run blockchain applications. So kind of an interesting play, I think.
Yeah, it seems like a big win for IBM, actually, too. They just had a big win with the Provenance application of blockchain with Walmart. Now they're getting AT&T for their supply chain and for new services. So IBM seems to have what large companies want.
Does this set off any kind of antitrust alarm bells for anybody else, or is that just me?
I think the market is too fragmented in blockchain.
In blockchain?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, very fragmented.
It is,
so
but you're looking at a ISP provider. And when you're looking at the current state of net neutrality here, I don't know, this raises my hackles.
They also do own, of course, the AT&T mobile phone networks. That could also be an issue in terms of advertising using that. It just seems like there could be some concerns here.
Yeah, they could throttle any other blockchain service provider if you're an AT&T commercial customer. Does that sound
net
nice?
Neutrality. No, that does not sound nice.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't want to be someone who wanted to explore the world of Internet of Things and blockchain and then just find that, I had to use IBM and AT&T's offerings because that's the only way that I'd be able to actually do it at speed.
Right.
Yeah, that's one thing. One of the applications they mentioned is digital rights management. It's blockchain secured so that they can control when you have access to something or not.
And you can
right.
certainly see why AT&T, having just purchased Time Warner, would be into digital rights management. Because they haven't been in the content game, but they are now.
They are now, absolutely. So they own the pipes and the content now.
This just reminds me how much more cynical I should start being when I read these things. I just see opportunities and not the cliff I'm walking over.
Well, and we need to look at both. Both are important.
Which is why we're so glad you're here, Mike.
Yes, among other reasons, yes.
But it's just something that, I'm not saying AT&T shouldn't play in this space, and I realize that it's a very fragmented space for now, but once you have huge players with immense market power coming in, they can change the fragmentation and the nature of the space pretty fast, especially if they don't have regulators who are on it, and I'm not sure that we do.
Well, actually, that's interesting, because in my next article, it's talking about creating decentralized autonomous organizations, or DAOs, They don't mention it specifically in this article, but that's what they're talking about. And the article specifically looks at using Nobel laureates and the firepower behind that, the intellectual firepower behind that, in a lot of new blockchain startups. So they want to create independent organizations. So if you create something, if you invent something, or if you have some content, you don't have to go to AT&T or HBO or whoever. You can create a decentralized blockchain organization to get all the pieces that you need to distribute, to make payments, and to protect your work without going to a large organization. So one of the companies doing this is Covey Networks. They have a partnership with a Nobel Prize-winning economist who looks at things like game theory and incentives and the way to structure these kinds of organizations properly so that they work well. Because, you know, one of the scary things with smart contracts and, you know, everything getting locked into the code from the very beginning is you can't go back.
Right.
You're stuck with it. So if there's a bug in the software, if you've not incentivized the activity properly, you might, and, you know, often happens, you create incentives for things you don't want, or in worst case scenarios, illegal things, or things that you can honestly say that you're not promoting, but the incentives, the economics.
The law of unintended consequences don't go away because blockchain exists.
I don't have to explain that then. Well, to avoid that problem, they're getting these experts. So some of the startups in blockchains that are doing that is a company called Prism Group. And they've got a Nobel laureate.
Prism with a Y, in case you're looking it
Prism.
Up.
Prism, yeah,
of course. Of course, that's where we want.
Because we can't just stick with the vowels that work.
Well, you know, those you can't get those websites. Those are long gone. So,
right.
So there are a few companies that are borrowing the brain power of the Nobel laureates. Some of them are Prism Group, who's working with Oliver Hart of Harvard University, who is a 2016 co-laureate. Cryptic Labs LLC is partnering with Eric Maskin, who shared an economics prize, a Nobel Prize, in 2007, and Christopher Pissarides. So they need this expertise to avoid problems. And this is a problem that's happened before. There's a company called, an independent blockchain-based organization called The DAO, that had some bugs in it, was able to get hacked, and lost hundreds of millions of dollars.
Wow.
And eventually fell apart.
I mean, would this be a great place, not just for Nobel Prize winner participation and their expertise in game theory and the like, but wouldn't this be a pretty good place for open source? I mean, I feel like when you're thinking about kind of the laws of unintended consequences and wanting to understand how lots of different people might interpret the rules or how that might drive their behavior. Like, don't you want kind of more brains, more actors?
Oh, I see what you mean. You'd rather have sort of a consortium of people looking at this in a transparent
yeah.
way rather than one guy saying this is where the system should work.
Yeah, like if Facebook had spent any time playing like a war game inside,
exactly. yeah.
maybe we would live in a different social media world. Maybe not.
Right. I know this mm-hmm. is off the blockchain beat, but I just watched the John Oliver thing on Facebook, Facebook's role in spreading
misinformation
in Myanmar/Burma.
Mm.
And it's, yeah, pretty fascinating.
And horrifying.
So back to game theory. So Alvin Roth is working with Covey Networks. He's saying that they are embracing game theory as a way of incentivizing participation. So that's what he's working on. These are all consultants to these companies so far. But not all Nobel laureates are chummy with the private sector and cheerleaders for blockchain. Paul Krugman of the New York Times, who won the Nobel Prize in 2008, says Bitcoin is evil.
But was he referring just to Bitcoin or to blockchain generally?
I think he's specifically looking at the problems with Bitcoin's early usage. Now, when he said this was admittedly back in 2013 when the Silk Road was, you know, very
dark
much,
web, buying drugs
web,
online,
and doing much worse things, horrible things with you know, using blockchain and Bitcoin to mask your identity.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully with the brain power of, 100 Nobel laureates, they'll be able to figure some of this stuff
out. They'll come on down from the ivory tower and make everything work.
And make everything work. And, things change. I'm sure corporations seemed odd or something you won't want to invest in early on until everybody else started making money.
I mean, corporations have been around since the East India Company. They've been making money for a long time.
Joint stock companies. Yeah. So, let's see what happens. And, I love the experimentation. And, a lot of times you try one thing and you find out that one part of that or some spin-off of that idea ends up being more valuable than the initial thing. So,
say like stablecoins compared to Bitcoin?
Yeah, you wouldn't have stablecoins without Bitcoin. Exactly. And that'll get spin off into something else, I'm sure, since it's still early in this world. So let's see what this ends up evolving into as well. So speaking of automation and potential abuse,
yeah,
the abuse that bots can unleash.
So the Wall Street Journal has an article out this week around a lot of different cryptocurrency exchanges are finding that the bots have been unleashed and they are creating all of the havoc and trouble that you would expect. And one of the things that I think is notable here is not so much that the bots are back, because that is as predictable as the sun rising in the morning.
I've been here, yeah.
But there is a divergence around how different cryptocurrency exchanges are dealing with bots.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I look at this article is, on the one hand, you've got some exchanges that really want to kind of come in and be accepted as just part of the regular investing world. They expect to be regulated by the SEC and comply with all of their requirements. And so they're really looking at the ways that they can lock down and either minimize or eliminate bot abuse and infiltration. And then on the other hand, you have some bot makers, as well as some exchanges that feel quite differently, that, you know, it is their exchange absolutely can be a free-for-all, and may the builder of the best bot win. So when I look at this,
some of these bots are like purposely manipulating the market.
Yeah, they're spoofing.
And,
they're designed to spoof, and so that the
creating dips and quick rises. We have, you know, the equivalent of flash crashes all the time on the crypto exchange side. It's just not as developed as the regulated market, right?
Yeah.
So are these bots basically unleashed by investors who maybe do who want to short some cryptos or do the opposite?
They basically want to use whatever opportunity for arbitrage that they can.
Right.
However momentary. If you've got an exchange that doesn't really have a lot of protections against that, then that opportunity certainly exists.
Well, the arbitrage opportunities are a good thing for the markets because they equalize the price between different exchanges. So they can sell
manipulated arbitrage is not.
Now, there are bots that do, you know, things that are not legal in the regulated exchanges. They're still out there in crypto because it's all over the world. It's between different countries. And so there hasn't been that international standard or anything or any controls yet on those.
So this would be another case of trader beware. I, for one, am someone who is not building my own bots, and I am not.
You don't have to. You can just buy, download one.
Yeah.
You can rent.
You can rent a bot. That's true too.
If you are someone who is doing some trading on some of these crypto exchanges, just something for you to be aware of and either rent or buy or write your own bot.
So two things on bots. I read recently that a lot of the online backlash against Rian Johnson's Star Wars movie, The Last Jedi,
mm-hmm.
was mostly bots, apparently, which wanted to kind of inflame the internet masses. So that's one. And the other one is that I'm a big user of Reserve America, the Reserve campsites around the Bay Area. And it's impossible to get a good site. Even if you log in at 7 a.m. the day that it's open,
yes.
and all that stuff, you can't do it. People create bots to snap up all those open slots for themselves.
As soon as, so unless you're doing it in 5 milliseconds, you're not going to beat a bot.
I remember sitting at my computer at like 6:59 a.m. in the morning to get a spot at Mount Tam, and I couldn't because somebody snapped up all the good weekend spots.
Well, just imagine that times 10,000 for...
And with a higher value than actually just a reservation.
Well, than a $25 a night cap site.
Yeah, yes. So it makes sense.
Well, even, you know, the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ, I mean, there's millions of bots on there with all types of algorithmic trading. And there, you know, there's good things and bad things about that. It increases liquidity, so you can buy and sell much more quickly and narrows the bid-ask spread. But where, you know, there are... The negative things are the problem, right? Where they're just doing it to straight out manipulate the market or mislead people.
Right.
And now it's time for our final bite, where we take a look at a number and the story behind it. First up, the biggest number of the week.
It is indeed. So my number is $20 billion, which is a massive number.
That is big.
It's a big one. So recently, Stripe raised $245 million as part of their efforts to increase their presence in Asia and also just get more customers, which means that now they're valued at $20 billion. So Stripe is now in the double digit. It's a decacorn. Is that what the
decacorn?
A duodecacorn.
Yeah, that's right. A 2X decacorn. Yeah.
What's interesting here is not just the push into Asia, but also that they want to go after some bigger firms. So like Stripe really made their name with, you know, relatively smaller web developers and online retailers. And now they're like, no, we want Uber, you know.
They actually announced that they have Uber as a client, as a customer, as well as Google and Spotify. Gigantic name. So, yeah.
I don't know exactly what they do so much better than everybody else. It's payment processing, but they're killing it.
So I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but How I Built This, which is another podcast put out, I believe by
Roz,
Guy
Raz.
Yeah. They interviewed John Collison, and it's a very interesting background on the firm. But so far as I can gather, because they do not go deep into the technical aspects, basically...
What APIs do they use?
Well, they have their own.
Yeah.
But basically what they enable is rapid and scalable credit card processing. So instead of like PayPal, where it just wasn't really usable if you were an online vendor, but you were way too small to get a lot of interest from, say, you know, whatever the other big players in the space are, probably big banks, Stripe gives you something that works really well for processing lots and lots of credit card transactions.
Well, that makes sense, and it's attracting a lot of attention. One thing I saw in the article was that there's been $18.6 billion in venture capital money going into payment startups. That's globally in 2018, which is already four times the amount that was invested in these kinds of companies just last year.
Go Stripe, 20B.
Go Stripe.
2X Decacorn.
So can you beat that number, Monica?
I cannot. So I'm also going to talk about the valuation of a company, and this one is Coinbase. Coinbase, we talk about them a lot. They are a leading marketplace for trading crypto assets, and they were just recently valued at $8 billion. This is quite a bump up from their valuation last summer, which was $1.5 billion. That was just before kind of cryptos went all crazy.
How did it sound? That's crazy.
But Coinbase just has is now taking in up to $500 million from Tiger Global and current shareholders.
Now, there's the thing, the bigger market cap, even with there's so much less trading and the value of cryptos have gone down so much.
It seems like it's shined recently, yeah. So why?
Well, I'm assuming that it's partly because they have they're really the go-to place if you want to be trading lots of different kinds of crypto assets.
Right.
So I'm assuming that it has more to do with that. This investment is half new cash and also half existing shareholders selling out as well. So some of those early investors are going to get some of their money back.
Nice. Yeah, I got to go down to my limousine soon. So my final bite is 0.80.
That is the tiniest number.
That is the smallest number this week. I dare you to get to a smaller one. So 80% is the amount that Ripple, XR, or the XRP cryptocurrency, has gone up during September of 2018. So it was the largest increase of the top 25 crypto assets in September. And on one day, September 21st, XRP shot up by 75%. So maybe a little bit of bot manipulation on that day, actually. And, you know, because it came down a bit since that day. But this was all in anticipation of the Swell conference, which started on October 1st, where they make their big annual announcements, their big conference. And they had an announcement with three clients for their XRapid product. So there was some hype. And it may appear that there's been some buying on the rumor and selling on the news, because now in October, Ripple has dropped 13% since their Swell conference. And so that conference just wrapped up this week, and included people like Gene Sperling, the U.S. economist under Barack Obama. Bill Clinton gave what was described as a rambling speech about a lot of different topics.
Typical.
But, you know, they got an ex-president in there. The Counting Crows performed there, so all kinds of fun.
Timely, yeah.
But, you know, you lost 16 or 13% of your XRP value at
so
the same time.
So volatility is still the name of the game.
Still a little. XRP is definitely not a stable coin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a two-word one.
Right.
All right. Thanks for listening. And please email us if you have any questions, comments, or any suggestions on topics you'd like to hear. Please make sure to hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.
Thanks again.
Bye for now.